Hi, and welcome to the Ask a Private Lender podcast. As always, I'm your host, Lawrence from Mortgage Automator, joined by my co-host, Joseph Fuchs. And today we have someone who I've known for a little bit of time, I'd say a couple of years now, doesn't live anywhere near where I live. We have Ryan McNeil from Graysbrook Capital. And Ryan is actually the director of alternative lending for Graysbrook, and he covers the four Atlantic provinces. Now, before we get to you, Ryan, this is a test for Joe. What are the four Atlantic provinces?
New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, Newfoundland, and
PEI.
PEI, Prince Edward Island.
PEI.
How did I forget
Grade
that one?
four. I guess
That's
that's
the
still
good
passing
four.
grade, but
And I had to look that up ahead of time. I just, full
I knew it.
transparency, Joe.
I knew you did. That's okay. I knew you were going to do that. That's fine.
Yeah, all
But
good.
no, Ryan, we really appreciate you stopping in. We're excited to have you. You know, before we get started with Graysbrook and the products you offer and the type of lending you do, just to find out a little bit more about yourself, how did you get into the private lending space? Was it always something you wanted to do? Did you have other ambitions? Give us the inside scoop.
Yeah, first off, Lawrence and Joe, thanks for having me today. I really appreciate being here. But yeah, so I have definitely a unique path that I've pursued to get into private lending. Probably not similar to most. Didn't follow through the bank kind of path. I was actually originally an engineer when I came out of school. Quickly realized that that was not the career path I wanted to pursue. So after about a year, I decided to go back to business school. I'd always planned on going to business school, but that kind of accelerated my plan. So I did that, and I got into the consumer packaged goods industry. Actually, up in I was in Toronto for about a decade. That was an excellent industry, very fast paced, very competitive, very highly analytical, obviously sales driven. So gained a lot of skills in that space that have kind of helped me transition into the mortgage space and specifically the private mortgage space. I came over to join Graysbrook in 2017. Graysbrook was originally a family business. It was founded by my father and my uncle back in 2006. They kind of slowly grew the business, and I'm sure we'll talk a bit more about that. But yeah, they were getting to a point where they needed a full-time BDM. They were kind of semi-retired from previous careers, I guess you'll say, and neither one of them had mortgage backgrounds either. So they just kind of stumbled into it. And like I said, I joined in 2017. So about 3.5 years ago, I basically found out what a mortgage was when I purchased my house about 2 weeks before starting at Graysbrook. So,
Nice.
you know, a bit of a learning curve at first, but at the end of the day, you know, it's just another product to sell. And I'm sure you guys are well aware with private lending, it's not overly complex. You know, you focus on your equity and your exit strategy, and you know, those are the two key things. So I got to commend, you know, the brokers and the industry partners out here in Atlantic Canada as well. It made my transition super easy, super welcoming, and have kind of helped me out along the way. And it's made the transition quite easy. So that's how I got here.
With your father starting the business, I think you said in 2006, was it something that was always in the back of your mind? Like, he's got a business, it's growing, maybe I'll be there. Was he someone who was poking you all the time saying, hey, Ryan, come over here, we have something great for you? Or was it something that just didn't really cross your mind until it was that one day where it's like, okay, I'm gonna do this?
Yeah, so it was a little bit of poking each other back and forth, I guess, for a couple of years, but certainly we talked about it for multiple years before it actually happened. The timing had to be right, of course. The business had to be at a stage where, you know, we could really accelerate growth, you know, to justify, you know, the incremental hire. But for me, you know, I absolutely loved living in Ontario. I met my wife in Toronto, had my first kid in Toronto. So it was definitely tough to leave and still have tons of good friends up there. But, you know, at the same time, you know, being able to come back to the East Coast and cost of living is a little bit more reasonable out here. So several driving factors, having a young family and obviously the opportunity to join a family business. So, you know, the stars kind of aligned, and the timing was right when I ended up coming. So it was a bit of back and forth, I guess.
And now, I guess it's a good thing you can control your inheritance. So you can see exactly where all the money's going, what deals it's going into, keep it nice and safe, and make sure you're going to be okay. So that's obviously a great thing as well.
No comment.
So let's talk about Graysbrook. You've been around for 15 years now,
Yep.
going on 15 years. I know that you just joined in 17, but I'm sure you've heard stories. How has the industry changed where you guys are located from early on to current, or even from 17 to current? Because there's a lot of things going on in the world today, and people are making, they're making moves, they're pivoting. What are you guys doing right now?
Yeah. You know, I'll go back in time a little bit, but back when they initially started the business, like I said, they didn't have backgrounds in mortgages and were just kind of doing some flips locally in Halifax here. And actually a mortgage broker from out here, a pretty prominent mortgage broker, had suggested to them, you know, there's a need for a private lender in Atlantic Canada. You guys should look into this. And they both kind of looked at each other and like, you know, lending money on people's houses, that sounds crazy, right? So it was very slow for the first couple of years. You know, I'm sure you guys have seen, you know, with the tightening of industry regulations, you know, and it was great timing for me in 2017 coming in, because that was kind of just getting started.
Yeah.
And that certainly accelerated, you know, the growth in terms of private lending's market share. And just being kind of established as like the primary brand name out here in Atlantic Canada, our timing was just perfect to kind of take advantage and ride that wave. And I like to remind them that our substantial growth started in 2017 when I first joined.
Yeah.
You put two and two together there, but I can't take all the credit, obviously, you know, with changes in the industry and, you know, the brand name having already been established to kind of put us in good position to kind of take a foothold on the market and just kind of continue growing from there.
Gracebrook is a household name in the East Coast. If you ever talk to anybody here, Toronto or anything, they said, do you know anyone out East? The first name that comes up from anybody, whether you're talking about trade shows or anything, it's Gracebrook. What did you guys do differently than, I know maybe you might not have as many competitors as some of the other people here in Toronto or BC have, but what did you guys do to differentiate yourself from everybody else to make yourself that household name?
Yeah, great question. And I'd say the number one thing that we did is having presence. And I mean presence at industry events, at broker socials or whatever it might be. And, you know, we aren't the type to just send our BDM to an event. We want to send, you know, whoever we can, right? Our underwriter goes. When Owen and Derek were with the business, they would often go, and that's my father and uncle. So we'd often have 3 to 4 guys at industry events, and it really made it easier. You know, when you're in a room with 50, 100 brokers and you've got tons of different lenders there, you can almost kind of corner the room a little bit. And if you have 3 or 4 people there, you're talking to so many different people and getting your message out there to so many people in a short amount of time. And, you know, when we'd get back to the office the next day, we'd have a little powwow and chat about, you know, who we talk to, who we need to follow up with. And that kind of shaped our strategy going forward. So I'd say our key thing was having presence and just being noticed at these events, which, you know, is obviously found to be quite important in this industry. And from there, I'd say just, you know, having a service focus to our broker partners, and speed is another thing as well that we really pride ourselves on, our fast turnaround time. So I'd say those are the key things, but certainly presence would be number one in terms of driving the brand.
There's one thing that I saw on the website that I really liked. I don't know if it's changed from what's going on now, but in-house appraisals. Is that something you guys are still doing consistently?
Yes, we do external appraisals for most new deals, but on construction deals, we'll often actually, you know, if it's local here in Halifax, or we have an office in Moncton too, so we've got staff there, I'll actually go to a site, you know, talk to the client, confirm their progress. So, I mean, it's not too hard to tell if a home is weather tight or not. You know, right. You don't always need an appraiser to go out there and check the box. So that's just, yep, a little, you know, service we offer that, you know, can save the client a couple hundred bucks and make life a little bit easier for them. And, you know, you get to develop that personal connection a little bit more. Sure.
Well, it's the money. It's also the speed, right? It's like, yeah, you order the appraisal, you're waiting.
It could be a week.
It just
absolutely
makes it a lot quicker. Product wise, what are you guys doing? You guys are doing residential, you're doing construction, you're doing renos. Tell us what you guys are up to.
Yeah, kind of all the standard buckets, I guess you'd find with typical private lenders. We started as exclusively residential lenders. So, you know, your standard equity takeout or purchases with a strong down payment. But we've really found our niche in the last 4 to 5 years in the construction and renovation space. So that's really, you know, what's accelerated our growth. I'm sure as you guys have seen that it's tough for brokers, especially, to get solid construction loans. And even loans that, you know, make sense for a client. So we often like to make the comparison that if you're getting a 5% rate at a credit union and you're locked in there for 5 years versus going to a private lender, getting your construction done in 6 months, you know, fully open loan, you pay us out and you refinance at a 3% or even less than that in this day and age, you might actually save money, and you're certainly going to save headaches by going that approach, right? So that proposition has seemed to work and resonate really well with brokers and clients. So we often get, you know, higher net worth, really strong credit clients coming in for our construction loans. Renovations are another key thing too that, you know, we focused on, and, you know, and especially in a market like Halifax that's fast growing right now, there's a lot of opportunity to increase value, especially with rentals. We also are starting to focus a lot more on the commercial side of things now as well, you know, starting to get into some larger stuff there. So that's kind of the future growth plans, is to kind of expand more into this space. But I'd say for now, it's certainly been construction and renovations that have been driving the boat for us.
Very, very interesting. And, you know, forgive me, I don't know the market that well. I assume, like everywhere else, it's a strong market. Like you were just saying, it's growing. Is there a big market for the building residential homes and reselling, or is a lot of the construction stuff for the individual owners themselves, or the rental project for the owners?
Yeah, I'd say it's mostly for the owners, but that's not to say we certainly do a lot of spec homes as well, but it really depends on where you're talking about too. So in, you know, if you're in Halifax or near Halifax, you know, that's a pretty safe, secure market, you know, be comparable to maybe like a London or a Kitchener-Waterloo type market in terms of size. Atlantic Canada is very diverse in terms of, you know, the geography and the spread in terms of the population base as well. So, you know, you can go an hour outside of Halifax and you're in a town of, you know, 10,000 people, right? Where your risk profile is completely different.
Right.
And not only that, you know, we're talking four different provinces as well. So
right.
New Brunswick, you've got some uniqueness. There's a couple, you know, bigger cities there that, you know, we're happy to lend aggressively in. And there's some areas as well that we might not lend at all. But, and then on top of that, you've got Newfoundland, which is completely different and is a more Alberta-like market, I guess. It can be a bit of a boom bust based on the economy. And right
based
now,
based on trades and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. You know, very dependent on oil and gas, of course, in Newfoundland. So we're much more cautious in that market, at least in times like this, where there's a substantial amount of unemployment. So stuff might get scrutinized a little bit more there, but we still actively pursue deals, especially in the St. John's area of Newfoundland.
So your father and your uncle, are they from Halifax?
So my uncle is from Halifax. So I worked with him during our overlap. They've actually since moved on from the business. And my father is based in Moncton, where we have our other business. Yeah.
But originally it started in Halifax, which was the major center. What made you guys decide to expand from just Halifax and have that market, which you obviously do anyways, but what made you say, I want to now go to PEI, New Brunswick, and Newfoundland?
Yeah, that's a great question too. So I'd say it was both New Brunswick and Nova Scotia that we kind of started in. It was Halifax and Moncton, Fredericton, St. John are the kind of the key New Brunswick markets that we started in. And, you know, the benefit we had, I mentioned, you know, none of us really had backgrounds in mortgages, but we'd all lived in several different areas in the Atlantic market, including our underwriters lived in several areas in Nova Scotia, New Brunswick. So most areas of Atlantic Canada, at least one of us would have lived in or would have pretty good knowledge of the market and whether it was a good area to pursue. So that was a key thing for us, and especially going to Newfoundland. You know, Newfoundland is, you know, I touched on it already, but it's a significantly different market, and it's actually quite far away. A lot of people are surprised when I tell them it's quicker to drive from New Brunswick to Toronto than it is from New Brunswick to St. John's. And that tends to surprise a lot of people.
Interesting.
You know, you have to either fly or take a boat to get to Newfoundland, right? So, and like I said, it's quite a different market. So luckily, Derek, my uncle, lived there for several years. He worked with ExxonMobil before starting Graysbrook. So he has a very strong market knowledge there. So in my first couple of years, you know, we'd go over there together, you know, explore some different towns and areas that, you know, we were interested in lending in so I could kind of get a better sense of it. But you know what, it's just having the knowledge of the markets, I think that's been the key thing and feel it in allowing us to feel comfortable enough to expand to the different provinces.
For sure. Because I know like Quebec, which is a 6-hour drive from, let's say, Toronto, totally different rules. Real estate's fine, like it's strong, but the rules with notaries instead of lawyers. I wanted to ask you, how did you guys deal with different legal rules, and which provinces are more pro lender and which ones are more pro borrower?
Yeah, another great question. So I'd say all of the markets out here are probably more challenging than Ontario by the sounds of it. New Brunswick and Nova Scotia are okay. The process that you have to go through there is not so bad from a legal perspective. Newfoundland, I'd have to say, it again, is probably the most challenging there. They've got laws that were, I think, last updated in 1949, if I'm not mistaken, stating like the max amount a broker and a lender can charge as a fee. You know, the way we typically do it, you know, we'd have, you know, a fee of a couple points plus our rate and, you know, in the maritime provinces. But in Newfoundland, we had to adjust and we basically shot our rate up a couple points more. And then our fees were capped at 1% in Newfoundland. So that was a bit of getting used to. And what we've kind of done to adapt there is just, you know, we typically do like fully open mortgages. In Newfoundland, we have some that are closed terms just to, you know, allow us a little bit more flexibility. But we always maintain that flexibility with the broker and the client as well. You know, if someone's had a perfect payment history and they have an opportunity to move on from the loan, you know, we're not going to stop them and ding them with a 3-month interest penalty in every single scenario. We're always flexible with something like that. It's just more so to protect us if need be.
Joe's invested in a couple of mortgage deals before and personal cash. And I remember I went to the office one day and he looked at me and he goes, I think I have to buy a plane ticket and fly to Nova Scotia. I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, yeah, I don't know. The guy doesn't pick up his phone and I think my money's gone. I got to go fly to Nova Scotia. Remember that, Joe?
I do remember that. So there was a guy we lent money to. It actually wasn't my money. It was someone else's money, but I felt sick to my stomach either way. The guy we gave money to, it was like 50 grand on a property worth like 110. It was in Nova Scotia. It was about an hour north. But like you said, it's a whole different animal an hour north. What happened was he did not have a phone. So we would have to call his neighbor. The neighbor then walked like 5 minutes to the guy's house, tell him to come and pick up the phone. And like, if I didn't catch him, I'm waiting another day to speak to the guy. I even had to have the lawyer from Nova Scotia drive to try to get a hold of the guy, sign him up. It was very stressful. And I realized at that point, like, if I don't know the areas, probably shouldn't be lending there.
That's why you're asking the question about how do you know all these different provinces. Have you ever thought about coming to Ontario?
Yeah, it's definitely something we've discussed. With COVID now, that's kind of put everything on hold in terms of, you know, something like that. But, you know, Ontario is a market that certainly interests me. I think there's obviously a lot of private lenders there already. So, you know, we'd have to have, you know, the right proposition to bring into the market and have to be the right timing. But I think I mentioned earlier, there's some comparable markets to out here. We wouldn't necessarily go there just being like, you know, we got to be GTA, GTA, GTA. You know, we might actually look at other markets, whether it's Southwest or up in the Ottawa area. That could be in our plans down the road. You know, we'll see how the next year or two play out here with the disruption we're dealing with at this time.
Dealing as, I don't want to say like a financial advisor, but you do advise people on where to invest their money. And people have a tremendous amount of trust in Graysbrook when they give capital over that you're going to do obviously the right thing. And I'm sure over the years you've met people that have substantial wealth, right? And they may give you a sliver of what they have. What have you learned? Have you learned anything from any of those types of individuals that kind of stuck with you? I know you've been here 3 years now, but you know, in that short period of time, is there something where you said like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. And I'm surprised I've never thought about that. Or I've never done that in my own life.
Yeah, I'd say the biggest thing that stands out from, you know, these higher net worth investors is just their drive and hunger for business. Constantly, you know, looking for that next deal or that next way to grow their business or to grow their own personal wealth. And the other thing is, too, is that they want to know, you know, exactly what you're doing, right? And not necessarily down to, you know, which property are you lending on and at what loan to value, but more so, you know, what you do as a business and why they should trust you with their, you know, $500,000 or whatever it might be, right? So that's the biggest thing I've learned. And it's kind of helped motivate me to, you know, always be prepared, you know your products and, you know, go in there with the story and being able to answer any questions or concerns they may have. So I'd say that's the key thing that stood out.
Do you find that investors typically come to you and they say, hey, Ryan, I have 100,000 or 200,000. And then a month goes by, they get their first payment to their bank or 6 months goes by.
A little
and they
taste.
Say, yeah, they got their little taste. They like what's going on. And now they come for real and they say, okay, this is really what I want to put in.
Definitely. Yeah. And sometimes, and we're structured a little bit differently now that that the business has been acquired. So we actually just have one investor now, but I'll speak to from beforehand. Definitely. We had tons of investors that would come in and, you know, do 50 or 100 grand. And then once they realized how well and how secure really their funds were, they got excited and they wanted to put in more. And we never had issues at any point, you know, raising capital because enough enough of these investors, you know, whether through word of mouth or, you know, themselves wanting to invest more, we'd often have a waiting list coming in the door to want to invest with us. So it was pretty cool to see that success.
And clearly you guys are doing something right. There's a waiting lineup of people ready to give you guys money. Tell us a story, something that you, a client that you clearly remember that stands out from the rest.
Yeah. Okay. So we've had like fraudulent checks before where, you know, someone comes in and they, I remember this one in particular, and it was literally like completely fraudulent check. And I can't remember if the money actually passed through. I don't think it did. I think it was identified right away. And that was actually before my time, but it was almost shocking to see someone, you know, try to push that through in their handwritten check or whatever it was to try to, you know, send us $100,000 to pay out the mortgage, right? One that comes to mind, and it's more of a unique deal than a client, I guess. You know, just talking about the relative size differences in the markets out here compared to Ontario and other markets, we had this one deal and it was downtown Moncton. So, you know, pretty good sized market for us, but we're still talking, you know, population of 120,000 people. There's this castle right downtown Moncton. And it's not like a castle in like a, you know, a big residential subdivision or anything like that. It's literally like standalone. It's the only thing there. And this had changed hands a couple times. I think it used to be some sort of royalty, and then it might have been like a seniors facility at one point. And then this property had sold and about 5-6 years ago. And I think the asking price was $1 million. There was someone interested in it, and they only had 5% down. So they actually found a private investor from outside of Atlantic Canada to come in. They funded the 95% of this. And then I think within a year, this place had gone completely sideways. There was no value in it whatsoever. And they ended up selling it for like $300,000 or $400,000. So whoever that investor was, whether they were actively engaged in private lending or not, they're probably not doing it anymore after a shock like that. But my point here was that a couple of years later, someone had acquired this probably for, you know, pennies on the dollar. And they converted this castle space into these high-end condos. And it's about, I think it's probably about 10 to 12 units in this place. They were, you know, 80, 90% complete. And then they'd reached out to us looking for a little bit of money to get to the finish line. And this is one we went into being like, you know, there's all this bad history with this castle and this and that. And we went into this property and within minutes, you know, we were looking at each other being like, we're all over this. We're doing this deal all day long. Everything was pristine. It was beautiful. We felt completely secure with our loan to value on this. I think we were sitting, you know, 40, 50% loan to value, but you know, you're still unsure because it's such a unique property, right?
And sure.
Anyways, the deal ended up going flawlessly. Client was great, got the place done. It's all rented up and we've been paid out. So it was just one of those things that, you know, your timing has to be right, but you also, again, you got to know the geography and what you're lending on.
It's a great story. I was kind of hoping it was going to end with, and now I live in a castle.
But yeah.
That's okay, too. But no, that's really cool. That's neat.
Yeah, we've had those discussions before, you know, on those certain deals where, you know, we're looking at each other and be like, well, if this one goes sideways, at least you'll have a new house to live in, right?
So, yeah.
But, you know, luckily for the client on this one, everything went smoothly.
And your old man, he's retired, he's done, he's out.
Yeah, both my dad and my uncle have retired. They basically had one-year contracts after the acquisition, and those have since expired. Yep. So they both moved on, and they're reminding me almost on a daily basis of all the strokes they're cutting off their golf game now. So nice. they're doing all right, despite not being able to travel, of course, or anything right now.
I don't think they need to travel. They've got the best course in Canada right in their backyard.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Our family's originally from Cape Breton as well. So I've unfortunately never got to play Cabot Links yet, but I know they have several times and apparently it's just blow your mind.
So. It looks incredible. We were actually trying to get out there this year, but unfortunately
didn't happen. Yeah.
Didn't happen.
So you guys deal with brokers. Who do brokers call to submit a deal? Like who should they get in contact with?
Yeah. So most brokers know our underwriter, James, really well, and they'll go direct to him. But, you know, often people will come direct to me as well. So we don't really mind if, you know, if you reach out to myself or James, that's probably your best bet is to go through one of us.
And obviously you can be found on the drop-down menu of Phylogix.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, I meant to mention that, guys. That's been incredibly helpful and smooth for us as well. And we're so glad we were, you know, one of the early ones to jump on with Phylogix. You know, it's made the process very seamless for brokers submitting deals. It's made it easier for us to underwrite and analyze deals, you know, having them come in. So James will often, you know, he'll get some applications that don't come through, and he'll almost push back now on brokers saying like, no, you need
put to put
biologics to do this.
Right.
Or else you're going to be waiting for another half day to get a response. Right. So
yeah, just makes it easy. You know, we have a little segment called Would You Rather. Kind of gives us an idea as the type of, I don't say the type of deals you like, but an overall of what you would prefer to see, right? And it has to do with rate and loan to value and all that sort of stuff. So number one, are you the type of company that wants to write like one big deal or several small deals? What do you guys prefer to do?
So the question is $1 million loan or 10 100K loans?
Okay. I guess for efficiency purposes, doing one would be better, but I think if I had to choose one of the two, probably the 10 smaller deals, just to kind of spread out the risk a little bit. But I'd also preface that by saying that we used to lend, you know, on $70,000-$80,000 properties, and we'd feel pretty good at, you know, 50% loan to value, maybe even 60% loan to value. But I'm sure as you guys have been through the process before on lower value properties, you don't have much room for error, no matter what your loan to value is.
Yep.
So I'd say if it was a $2 million deal versus 10 $200,000 deals, I'd probably choose the 10. But in this scenario, given the values, I'd say maybe the one larger deal might be best overall.
I'm sure you get calls. Hey, I have a great deal for you, Ryan. It's 50% loan to value. It's $40,000 on an $80,000 house. And you're like, well, let's see, legals, real estate, problems.
Absolutely.
Like the equity
fixing up property. There's nothing left.
Yeah, we've had to change our minimums in terms of property values to reflect that. And you know, it's just reflective of the market here. And there's so many smaller areas with lower value properties. You know, in certain scenarios, it makes sense, whether, you know, it's a blanket scenario, or if you get someone with pristine credit that is easily going to be able to refinance to a bank in a year's time. But for the most part, the opportunities we get, we want to see a certain minimum property value.
Very good. What about from a yield loan to value perspective? Would you rather do like, and I don't know your rates, and maybe we can get into that if you want to talk about it, but would you rather do like a 50% loan to value deal at like your lower end of the rate? So let's say 699 is a first, or would you rather go to the higher end, 75% loan to value or 80% loan to value to get a much higher yield for your fund or your investor, whatever you guys have it set up now? What would you prefer?
Yeah, I think it depends on like the credit profile and a bunch of different factors. But I'd say probably in that scenario, the lower yields overall, just to keep the security with a loan to value perspective, just because we don't see, until recently with COVID, it's kind of accelerated prices out here. But for the most part, prices are very stagnant. You know, in Atlantic Canada, you usually see, you know, 1% to 2% price appreciation per year. So if you're starting off at 75, 80% loan to value, you don't have much room for error on something like that, right? And right. If you get into, you know, year two and three, if things don't, you know, exit the way they were supposed to, you could get into some trouble and being in a higher LTV perspective. So I'd say in that one, yeah, probably the lower loan to value with the lower yields. If we're talking someone with stellar credit too, that, you know, is kind of a, you know, it's a good deal. You know, you may be secured on a couple properties. In that scenario, I'd obviously prefer, a higher yield and higher loan to value.
So credit is a factor for you guys. You're not fully on the equity train in terms of like, yeah, whatever, if there's equity, I'm going to do it. Or I guess you'll go higher. I guess if it's a good borrower, you trust they're going to make the payments and they're going to be okay at the end of the day.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's a driving factor for us. Equity and exit is what it's all about at the end of the day for us. Like a secondary factor is credit. And that's really, you know, like you said, you know, if we're going to go to 75, 80% on a given client, we need to have some sort of comfort that, you know, they're going to be able to repay and service the loan. Yeah. So I'd say for that we would look at credit for that as kind of a secondary factor. But, you know, there's certain scenarios too, right, where people have all sorts of reasons, you know, their credit might be a 580 because of high utilization or from a missed cell phone bill or something like that.
Sure.
Something like that, you know, we're happy to pursue something like that regardless of what the score is. So.
Sure. What about like Banco? What about like low LTV with like bankrupt clients, you know, no income?
Yeah. Let's say I'll give you
higher LTV, but like spotless credit and great income.
Yeah, I'd say it comes back to geographic location, marketability of the property would be the key things to look at there, and geography probably being number one.
Right.
In that scenario, in a rural area, we probably wouldn't pursue something like that. But that's not to say I feel like I'm being unfairly harsh on a lot of the rural markets as we talk here. We started originally, and we still do. We don't have any geographic restrictions across all of Atlantic, so. We still want to see brokers submit those deals. It just, you know, when you're in those more rural areas, obviously there's more due diligence being done in terms of, you know, proceeding with the deal.
For brokers listening to this, maybe brokers who've never sent Graysbrook a deal before, give that pitch. You know, why should they send to you? What kind of deals are you looking for? Just so they have an idea. And from what I hear, it's basically send in the deals. We'll tell you what we like. And it'll be a trial and error process of, you know, we'll do this one now. We're not going to do this one because of X, Y, Z. But tell us what you're looking for.
Yeah, I'd say just like you said, you know, send it into to myself or James. Even if it's not a fit, you know, we still look at that as a coaching opportunity or an opportunity to establish a relationship with the broker or talk about our lending parameters. So we still want to see those deals come in. In terms of our parameters, like I said, we don't have any restrictions on geography, but obviously, you know, in those more rural areas, we might be at a 50% loan to value. But in the urban areas like the Halifax, Moncton, the St. John's, you know, we'll go up to 75, even 80% on exception on some of those areas. So that's the key thing too. And the other thing I touched on it already was just with our construction loans, we really feel we kind of stand out above other lenders here, whether it's a bank construction loan or a credit union scenario. We think our product, the flexibility you get with our product, the fast turnaround, you know, not having to jump through those same hoops, it just makes logical sense whether you're, you know, someone who's had some credit challenges in the past or you're someone with stellar credit and you might be business for self, right? So those are really the clients that we're really, you know, chasing after. But at the same time, you know, people with, you know, those credit repair situations or, you know, that are equity rich and cash poor, we're all over those deals too. So I'd say right across the platform, we want to see the deal. We want to chat with the broker. So, you know, keep reaching out to myself and to James.
You heard it here from Ryan directly, what he's looking for. I always say to people, give him a shot. What do you have to lose? And don't send them the deal where you've sent the 55 other people and everyone said no, it's a bad deal.
Give
send
them an honest chance. Deal.
Yeah. Give them an honest chance. Learn the process. See what they're all about. They have the name for a reason. They've been around for a long time for a reason. They're obviously a great company with a good group of guys and girls. So give them a shot. Send it over. Ryan, I always ask one question towards the end of the podcast. It's pizza related. I don't know if you are a big pizza guy, and I've never been over where you are. And if I do fly over, I want to know where to go. What's the spot? Where do we got to go?
Okay, so I'm gonna stay close to where my house is in Dartmouth. It's on the other side of the harbor from Halifax. We've got Yaya's Pizza. I don't know if you guys remember the Sandlot growing up.
Of course.
Yeah. So yeah, Yaya was I think the younger brother of one of the guys on the Sandlot. He was one of the characters on the Sandlot. Anyway, so this is what the pizza shop is named after, and absolutely phenomenal thin crust pizza. It'll blow your mind. So I'd highly recommend that. And it's actually, just to give another pitch for Dartmouth, it's actually in the same building as this coffee shop called 2FIC. And they are, Halifax is literally famous for the croissants that these guys make at 2FIC. So I'd also highly recommend that if you're into that little brunch for you. I recommend the almond croissant. You can't beat it.
So you've got breakfast and lunch covered.
You got
and dinner with the pizza.
Absolutely.
Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I love it. Ryan, thank you so much for doing the podcast. We really appreciate it. For everyone out there listening, give them a shot. You know, I've known Ryan for a few years now. Great guy.
Graysbrook's a household name.
Yeah, household name. You can't go wrong. Give him a shot. Thanks for tuning in. Follow Mortgage Automator on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and we are Automator Group on Twitter. Go to askaprivatelender.com to check out all the latest episodes. Again, Ryan, thank you very much. And don't forget, send them a deal. Don't sleep on Graysbrook. They're great.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, guys. That was a lot of fun.
It was a pleasure. Right. Thanks.
Talk soon.
Thank you for tuning in to the Ask a Private Lender podcast. Go to askaprivatelender.com to check out the other episodes. Follow Mortgage Automator on Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook, and we're Automator Group on Twitter. and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye.